I am so happy we have Alex on the line because I know you are busy, busy, busy. I know you've been working on Tron and other projects. So thank you for making time to talk with me today.
Oh, yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm really glad it worked out.
I have watched what you've done over the decades from your films like Extract, Gone Baby Gone, Sunshine Cleaning. You had some really fun stuff happening costume-wise in there. Your series, Big Little Lies, of course, and True Detective. But you really changed up the game here with Palm Royale. Boy, oh boy, and you knock it out of the park, Alex. Just knocked it out of the park.
Thank you.
The costume designs on Palm Royale are spectacular. I felt like I was transported back in time to 1969, which I lived through. This is so period specific and spot on perfect. And I'm looking at the fabrics, I'm looking at the fashions, and everything looks vintage. Even new things that you had to create, you really captured it. It's like you went back and you pulled out those Simplicity and McCall's patterns and found that brocade fabric that was in Singer and House of Fabrics in 1969, and you created magic. Where? I mean, you've got one brocade gown in there, and the fabric, I recognize the fabric, and my mother made herself an evening wear dress out of that very similar brocade. And
it's, oh, that's incredible.
It's always stuck in my mind all these decades.
Yeah.
So to see it pop up in here, it was just everything. It was just so beautiful. But where do you start with this? Because you have so many distinct personalities, and you're dressing each for their personality.
Yeah.
You were going into this from Maxine's eyes, and we're seeing a transformation in Maxine. And then we have that whole West Palm Beach area that are, it's you know, the hippie era that you bring to life there. So where do you even start with this?
I think that ground zero was Western costume, going to the library there and pulling out Vogue, McCall's, Town and Country, you know, all of the fashion magazines from that era, from the U.S. mostly, some European, but I think our story is so Americana.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of just getting the gauge of fashion, what was happening in fashion at the time, and then kind of seeing what real people were wearing. We did a lot of Flynn Aaron's photography. We took those socialite families and kind of did a deeper dive on them and got whatever we could image-wise from, you know, real families that were, that had summer houses in Palm Beach and that would come out for the season. We had kind of Betsy Bloomingdale, Dita Blair, you know, Marjorie Merriweather, who was an influence for the Carol Burnett character. And yeah, we did a lot of, you know, research and visuals in that world, and then just started to get out there and pull and see what was around. And we had just incredible luck because vintage couture is so in vogue currently.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that are going to their grandparents' closets and getting out those items, and they're worth a lot of money, and people are excited about them, where I don't think that was happening 10 years ago.
No.
So there are a lot of people that have vintage archives that were extraordinarily helpful for us. And so we were able to use a lot of original pieces. There's a lot of original stuff on the background. But in terms of, you know, longevity of your shooting day, we did end up making, recreating a lot of silhouettes based on you know, vintage patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Or dissecting a certain dress and recreating it in a different fabrication. We did a lot of fabric printing where we would take a silk or a silk organza or a cotton or a sturdier fabric and print actual vintage prints on that fabric and then cut from there, so it was a sturdier garment. We did all kinds of things like take rotting gowns that still had its beading intact and just cull the beading and put the beading on top of a new dress with new fabric. You know, ISW has a great vintage fabric archive. Mood does a lot of those brocades that were almost the same in the 60s.
So, do not let me into that store. It's a disaster every time I go in. I spend hundreds.
Oh, I know. It's crazy. And really, I have been such a fan of the back wall at Mood of all the beading for so long and thought, like, just dreamed for years. Like, oh, I just want to show where I can use this. And here it is. And I was there every day and just, you know, would bring back, you know, the fabrics I've been drooling over for years and years and years. I finally got the job where I got to use them.
Oh, my God. And I know as I'm looking at some of these things, I know you had to recreate, because we take a look at chiffon. Maxine gets put into chiffon as she starts changing, and that one gown she's wearing on the boat, and that's layers and layers of chiffon. Chiffon does not do well in water. Especially that many layers, because it also gets very heavy with that many layers. So I'm sure you had to actually build that one for as much time as she's in the water in that dress. Vintage was not going to survive.
No. We had ultimately 5 of those dresses. And that, you know, was in the middle of our shooting schedule. And our cutter and sewing, our sewing room almost, you know, I almost lost them over that because each skirt was 20 yards of fabric. And, you know, some of the fabric was dyed. We had, you know, different shades of pink. It wasn't just one shade. It was levels of pink. And, you know, just a hem dress was 20 yards of chiffon and it's an entire day.
Yeah.
So it was quite a feat. And then, of course, I brought back one of those beaded fabrics from Mood. And, you know, my assistant designer, Lee Bell, who's incredible, she looked at me and said, you know, we have to match 5 of those gowns. So that's, you know, they had to take off all the beads and reorient them so they all matched. And, you know, it was just stuff that I wasn't thinking about because I was going a mile a minute, but, you know, someone who has to sort of deliver the 5 matching gowns was thinking about, so the work got even harder. That was a challenge, as was the yellow chiffon gown that Maxine goes into the pool in. We had found that gown, decided that was the gown she was going to wear to the gala the night before, and it's a one-off original vintage gown that we found in the archives of Western Costumes. Then, you know, heard through the grapevine that Abe and Kristen wanted to go in the pool on this dress, and so we were sort of panicked. And again, my incredible assistant designer found 2 other of those gowns original on Etsy in 2 different places.
Wow.
One was back east, one was in the Midwest somewhere. And so we just took the bodice, the white beaded bodices, and got, you know, yellow chiffon and built the skirts. But that was a real challenge. And then made 2 beaded fur capes to go with.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wanted her to fall in the pool with angel wings, but it, you know, on the day it ended up like, you know, that beaded cape was just
good enough.
Pounds as it was, they couldn't imagine getting it wet.
Oh my God!
She uses it as a blanket, which was kind of perfect. I'm glad that it ended up the way it ended up.
Because as I'm watching all of this, because I binged the entire 10 episodes at one time, I'm now on my third I'm now on my third time through the series.
Fun. That's awesome. I love that.
I love it that much. But as I'm watching every episode, and because I used to make all of my own clothes, and I know the tedious nature of working with 20 yards of chiffon and multiple layers of it and pleating it, and the ruching at the bodice to create that empire or A-line, it's a pain in the butt. And so I kept thinking about you and your sewer, your seamsters, as to what you were going through. Because you are dressing so many different people, and by the way, that final beach ball white gown that Maxine wears, I absolutely love it. I love the quote-unquote beading, because that's not really beading those, you know, hexagon or oxagon-shaped pointels, for lack of a better word. Beautifully done, beautifully placed, and they reflect the light so well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's one of my favorites, for sure. I love how successful that dress was.
That is a stunner. That you could throw into a store right now, and people would snap it up. Because you are dressing so many different people, but you're also, in addition to dressing your main characters and your background characters, who I notice all of them are rather plain. They're not wearing the prints, the bright pop art cotton sheath dresses that Maxine wears. They're not wearing the fancy, you know, watercolored chiffons, such as we first see Evelyn appear in, looking very Iris Apfel, by the way, with the glasses and the pearls. But you've also got to work with the production design. This is one of the rare instances where costuming, production design, and set dress are so interconnected. How was that working with John and with Ellen? The set dress and the production design are so distinct and so colorful. You've got to, and there are times when we really want to see Norma's house. We don't really care what anybody's wearing. We care about going through the house. But then there are other times we really need, we need Norma to stand out in her house.
Yeah.
So she's got to be dressed in a color and a fabric that is going to make her, that so she doesn't wash with the walls. How challenging was it for the three of you, you and Ellen and John, to work together to come up with this cohesiveness and balance? That could not have been easy.
You know, I want to say it was one of the easier relationships I've ever had in the 30 years I've been doing this job. John Carlos and I were so in sync from the jump. And it was, he knew and I knew how important it was for us to be joint at the hip and to always check in with each other about every scene and every set. And so when he, you know, fundamentally understood that, you know, for instance, Grayman's, the couturier, he had to give me a very stark canvas because those costumes were going to be very, very big and colorful and voluminous and silly. And he gave me a very minimal background to shine, whereas, you know, maybe the bookstore, Linda and her feminist group, he created this insanely wonderful wall with a giant uterus on it.
Yes.
And, you know, and that way it was my job to do denim and earth tones and sort of let his set sing. The Delacorte Mansion was one of the most incredible sets I've ever set foot on. He and Ellen did just the most incredibly detailed job. It was magnificent. And you get, it's shot really well. Like, you get the sense of how big it is and how layered it is. And, you know, in those scenes, people were coming and going, like, you know, the Douglas character was coming from the golf course and, you know, Maxine was coming or going. And so you couldn't always control the print and the costume when it was entering.
Mm-hmm.
But I am grateful that those scenes were so intimate that you get a feel for, you know, we were able to lose a jacket here and there and a layer here and there so that the set was more in the foreground.
And that was really interesting. That was interesting also, Alex, because as we have layers of clothing, like Norma's mansion is very layered with the levels and the layers of tchotchkes and pillows and things like that. So I like that parallel that we see on screen of the layering.
Yeah, I mean, he had an entire wall. Tibetan puppets that were... I mean, it was incredible, the detail, and it really said so much about the Norma character, which we didn't know anything about Norma, really, yeah. until the end, until the slideshow. But, you know, John Carlos was giving us Easter eggs the whole time and hints as to who she was.
I mean, just exquisite. But before I save the best for last, I have to ask you, probably a very strange question, but because we have people that are so suntanned, such as Maxine, did that impact some of your color choices? Because, you know,
it doesn't so much impact, but it pushes it in the right direction. We were really dogmatic about the palette inside the Palm Royale and how white it had to be and bright the colors had to be, and no denim, no earth tones at all, nothing dark. I mean, there was minimal even navy accents. It was, you know, if you think of Lily Pulitzer and you think of Palm Beach, you think of that sherbet palette. And so everybody was in those colors. And I think that, you know, innately goes well with a suntan. So it complemented it, I think.
When Maxine is in her West Palm Beach, the Sago Motel, and she's so tan, and then against the Palm Beach ladies, the Palm Royale ladies, she's so tan. and, you know, some color just does not go well.
Yeah, for sure.
But now you've got Allison Janney in a showgirl costume with feathers in her hair. You've got a beach ball with mermaids coming down from a ceiling, and you've got Carol Burnett. Mm-hmm. Will you ever be able to top that trifecta? And how did you work with those three elements?
Never. I mean, I told Abe, like, there's no way I can ever go back to jeans and hoodies. I mean, I am totally ruined from here on out. That was just the dream. The beach ball was so much fun because of, you know, multiple sets of showgirls, starfish and jellyfish and custom waitstaff in sailor costumes and, you know, all the background in their finest. It was sort of the culmination of all the galas, so everybody had to sort of keep their best gown for that last gala.
Mm-hmm.
The coconuts, the you know, the modern, the 60s version of a drag show. It was, everything was thrown at it. And thrown at it relatively last minute compared to the other episodes. We didn't really know how it was going to end.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of keeps things close to the chest. And so John Carlos and I only really knew had scripts for the beach ball. And not even completed scripts, just outlines, about 6 weeks before we shot. So we threw everything we had at it. We had anyone with a sewing machine in the Los Angeles, San Bernardino area helping us. We had an incredible team of specialty costumers making those showgirl costumes. And thank goodness we had the trust of our actors and our producers, because we couldn't have we didn't have time for second guessing. We just had to kind of just do it.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you got to do what most people, Bob Mackie did it for years. You are following in Bob Mackie's footsteps and dressing Carol Burnett.
It's bananas. I can't even, it's too hard for me to even fathom that's happening. And even in the moment, just to be in her presence, let alone allowed me to dress her, and the compliments that she paid me, and, you know, the little anecdotes I got to listen to in the fitting room, and, you know, she, her relationship with Bob Mackie was one of the reasons why I became a costume designer. I used to watch it with my grandmother, who had a sewing machine. She had a full sewing room, a cutting table, and a steam iron and everything, and made a lot of my clothes when I was younger. She was very, very glamorous, and I had just googly eyes for her, and we would sit and watch the Carol Burnett show, and we would dissect Bob's costumes, and talk about them. And I was enamored by the characters that he and Carol built together and the pageantry of it. And of course, his gowns for Cher were just over the top and so wonderful and just sculpture. So I was beyond thrilled to be in her presence and to be able to have that opportunity. It was a lifelong dream, really.
You know, how many headpieces did you come up with, turbans, for Norma? Because she spends so much time
she
in bed.
She was really excited about the turban concept because it got her out of wearing her Norma wig. So we had, I think, four in total. And the turban thing came sort of mid-series, so I think, you know, if we are lucky enough to get a season two, and I think we'll do some more fun turbans for her, because I think it was really successful.
It really epitomizes 1969 Palm Beach glamour.
Totally, totally. The effortless glamour, that version of effortless.
Just gorgeous. Now, very quickly, mm-hmm. if you have to pick your most challenging and gratifying aspect of Palm Royale, what would it be?
You know, it was a really quick scene, but it was a flashback to Maxine at the pageant show in Chattanooga, where she gets free of a beaded straight jacket and a full gown comes descending underneath. It was so challenging to try and figure out how to make that work successfully, and we had a couple of different cutters try it and failed. We had to kind of have a gown underneath that couldn't wrinkle because we had it all balled up in this basket underneath the straight jacket. We had to have it be easy enough for Kristen Wiig herself to free herself from, then pull a cord and have the gown spill. The first time she had it on and tried it, we were filming. So it was first take. We had never seen her practice it. It was nuts. We were moving so fast. And if it didn't work, then the whole scene wouldn't have worked. So all of us, all the stitchers, we had an incredible pattern maker who came in and saved the day on that straight jacket. We were all, we couldn't even breathe. So she did it the first take and it worked perfectly. I mean, it was like one of those moments where I was up for many nights trying to figure out how to make that work and I just couldn't figure it out. It was just asking a whole lot. And Abe just looked at me and he said, get a drag queen. Go get a drag queen. I'll figure it out for you.
Oh, my God. Anyway. Alex, this is job so well done. I want a season two. I want you to come back for season two. I can't wait to see what you do with another season of this. And, of course, in the meantime, I can't wait to see what you've done with Tron.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was a whole other world. I really, really appreciate all the compliments. I'm so proud of it, and it was the job of a lifetime, truly.
Well, hopefully you'll have it as job of the lifetime number two for a second season.
Let's hope.
Alex, thank you so, so much, and I hope we get to chat again in the future.
Thank you so, so much.
Thanks, Alex. Bye-bye.
Bye.